Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and I am joined by...
Kayla, as always.
As always. In I haven't spoken to you since last year. That's the best. Great joke. Yeah, it's a new year. We took a couple weeks off. Our last episode was the Way of Water episode, which I think is how it should be. That's like how the year should always end. And now we're back for a new great slate of content and talking about, kicking right off, talking about a 2023 movie. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
Because there's not always like new movies to talk about in January that are good.
Well, and I think last year it was Scream was the first one we talked about. So we're just kicking off.
Which we were infamously not fans of. Yeah. So at least this one will be a better episode.
I will say, though, the marketing for the new Scream, like the next Scream,
yeah,
is so good so far that I'm like, you know what? Maybe the next one.
Yeah, I mean, I'll see it
a little better. I'll see it.
I'll be there day one. I like New York. I like murders, so it seems like a win-win to me. We are also joined today by two guests, so that's also exciting because we sometimes like don't do a lot of guests at the beginning of the year, and then we realize, man, we're kind of getting bored of ourselves like halfway through, and then we do a ton. So hopefully this year we can spread them out a little more. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves to the audience?
Oh, all right. I guess I'll go first. I'm Bhavna. I'm one half of the Bloody Broads pod, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Jamie.
Hi, I'm Jamie.
Wow. And do you want to say what your podcast is kind of like, what kind of movies and topics you cover?
Yeah, so like Bhavna said, we're the Bloody Broads. We focus on horror, and we always talk about, inevitably at some point in the episode, mental health, family history, growing from your trauma, that kind of stuff. Basically, like being the final girl of your own life.
So true. Love. Yeah, that's great. Love that. Aren't we all?
Yeah.
And that's why today we are talking about Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. Oh, man. No, yeah, that's great. I think you definitely have a much better niche than we do. We're a little too all over the place in our minds to have one niche, I think, which is our downfall.
No. Yeah, our niche is, what do we want to talk about?
Listen, but that's why you guys are so, like, off the cuff and funny, because, like, I'll be listening sometimes, and I'll just be like, oh, working on something or cleaning up. And one of you will just have these hilarious one-liners in response to each other. I always say this with, like, the most love in my heart, and I've said it to Kayla before, but you guys are like the Statler and Waldorf Muppets, but of film criticism. And I just,
that's great.
I really, yeah, I vibe. So it's fun.
That's really the best compliment, I think. The best, like, comparison.
Yeah, I mean, being compared to any Muppet is, like, pretty much my life dream.
Yeah.
To be associated with the Muppets in the same sentence is, like, honestly the best compliment I can receive.
Yeah, well, speaking of Muppets, this episode, this movie kind of has like a doll like figure, puppet like figure at the center of it. Megan is the movie we're talking about, which I feel like the trailers have been playing for it for so long that I wasn't sure when it was gonna come out until like 2 weeks ago when I looked on like my movie app whenever I like go to buy movies tickets, and it's like, yeah, pre-sale tickets are up. I'm like, they are?
Yeah, it was like we had talked about it being kind of I think when we talked about The Black Phone recently, we talked about it being like a popular TikTok movie, we think.
Oh, we did call that, which I think
we
is going to be true.
And, yeah. And they commented on that because we said, kind of before any of the promo started going around, we were like, oh, yeah, this seems like one that would be popular on TikTok. And I guess I read something today we can talk about when we talk about maybe some of the marketing later. But they said that they weren't sure if they wanted to include her, like, dance thing that they did in the trailer, because they thought it was so cool that they were like, maybe we'll leave it in the movie and not have it be a trailer reveal. But then the fact that they did it as a trailer reveal, because someone was like, it'll be big on TikTok, you have to do it.
Yes.
That was how it kind of, the viral marketing around it started. And so I was, we've been talking about it being a TikTok movie, but then we found out that it came out on January 6th, and then we made this whole joke about how it was like the insurrection movie because it came out on January 6th.
Megan, where was Megan on January 6th?
She is a white blonde woman. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. And I mean, they'll go right from the Wednesday dance to the Megan dance to whatever the next movie is coming out in February. I don't know what's coming out. But yeah, and I mean, what's really cool, we can talk about a little bit in at the start here, how well this movie has done already on opening weekend.
It's
so
insane.
Avatar's been like the top for 3 weeks now. I don't know. It's the last December's really blurred together for how long that's been. But yeah, knocked Avatar off the top, and it was projected to get... Kayla, were these projections for opening weekend like domestic projections or worldwide projections?
I'm not sure. I think
either
it was
way,
worldwide. They were only expecting 17 to 20. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and
that was just
45
a stat that I had read
this weekend, which is crazy. Like, it's wild. Horror movies are where it's at if you want to get profit.
Yeah, and I sent you today I sent you a tweet a couple hours ago that said it was like the biggest original movie opening in a certain amount of time since Nope.
Yeah,
which is pretty impressive. Again, every time this happens, people are like, wait, horror's big? And it's like, yeah, it's not like these horror movies do exceedingly
so
well.
How much money does a movie have
the
to
theater.
Make at the box office for someone to take it seriously?
Pretty much. I mean, that's the thing is like, and it's another reason why we started our podcast is like, even in the campiest version of horror, there is some sort of emotional connection that you're going to have to it and some sort of, I mean, almost academic discussion that you can have around it, even with like the campiest, you know, silliest slasher. I'm not shocked at all that it did this well. It's crazy, but I'm not shocked at all. The marketing, like Kayla said, I can't wait to dive into that because holy shit, the life-size dancers of Megan were genius. I mean, they kind of modeled it after Smile's guerrilla marketing.
I was going to say they took what Smile did and literally ran with it.
Right. And do you guys think, and I was so glad that you wanted to talk about this, because do y'all think that Scream could do this? I don't think people would take it seriously. Like, I think Ghostface is too much of a Halloween costume.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it would be hard for them. They would have to really like rebrand the series, which they might be doing.
They could
do like something in New York.
Yeah, I was
they
gonna say
do, like,
maybe on the
thing.
Subway. Like, maybe there's a day on the subway that like people in Scream costume. But I also think it's harder with that because he's such a notorious murderer,
right?
That I think it also would be almost like there's a very fine line of like, is this a marketing campaign or
if I
is,
saw Scream Face on the subway
if I saw
I
Ghostface on
off.
The subway with
Ghostface,
like a knife or something, I would honestly leave. Like,
that's what I was
think
gonna
it's
say
probably a real murderer.
Like if
so.
I get on the subway, especially at night, and a very tall person in a Ghostface costume and it's just us on the subway,
imagine.
Deuces, I'm out. Like, Kayla's seen me in person. I am 5'2", not a lot else going on. It'd be bad. Like, I'm not.
But I could see them doing something similar to like maybe the Smile campaign where they're at a sports game or like something that's not as in the general public but is at the same time.
If Ghostface showed up at a sporting event, that would be like the ultimate crossover for my brand. I would like be obsessed. But
honestly, mine too.
Yeah, I digress.
Yeah, I mean, sports games feels like that's been a thing recently. Like Nathan Fielder showed up at the sports game and that went around forever. So maybe that's like the thing now. Sports games are where it's at for the big Jumbotron spots.
I love Nathan Fielder.
Make sports great again.
Oh, God.
Make sports scary again? I don't know.
I mean, sports are pretty scary,
as
depending on the sports you watch.
Sports are pretty scary for multiple reasons. Yeah, I think it with horror movies, it just has a very... They always do well because it's very marketable to a wide variety of audiences. Like, you always have the built-in people who will see literally any horror movie that gets put in theaters. And then you have, though, a lot of general audiences who, I think, horror movies more than even superhero movies, or just like people feel like they really want to see them with a group of people, because they're really fun to see with a lot of people screaming or like laughing or whatever, and especially if you have a big group of friends. I won't like name names, but I teach middle school.
Oh, bless you.
When I went to see Violent Night, I walked in and a bunch of like probably 20 eighth graders that I knew were in for Violent Night. And I just went up like, did you guys sneak in? And they were like, maybe. And so like, and I just walked away. Like, their people love to go to horror movies in big groups. And then I walk into Violent Night alone with my Welch's fruit snacks and my water.
I saw Megan alone.
Oh, I saw Megan with a friend who actually I also met via film, much like Kayla. And he was in town for the weekend from LA. We were having a meeting and he was like, hey, do you want to go? I was like, I'm going to go see Megan Friday night, whether you want to go see it or not. So you can come or not. But Noah, bless you, because I got to say, a group of eighth graders is like my nightmare.
Do you want to then jump into reading like the summary and then getting into maybe talking about how our theater experience was?
Yeah, sure. Okay. All right. Well, let's quickly read a synopsis just in case anyone who is watching has not seen a trailer or just doesn't know what this movie's about. So a synopsis would be helpful in that case. So here is what the movie Megan is all about. When Caddy's parents die in a car accident, she is taken in by her Aunt Gemma, who works as a developer for a major toy company, where she is building an interactive AI doll named Megan, which stands for Model 3 Generative Android. Gemma, in an attempt to save her job and help Caddy, lets Caddy pair with Megan, but as Megan gathers more intelligence, things quickly go awry. Hmm. I like the awry. That's a nice
addition. Thank you. So how was everyone's theater experience? Like, what was there a lot of people, or like...
Decent amount, yeah.
Mine was sold out.
Oh, wow.
Mine was sold out, yeah. Too. But, so, Bhavna, I wanted to hear yours, because you went on Thursday night. So, like, you went opening night, like, one of the first showings.
Yeah, I went with my friends Mark and Sean, who I actually, we go to see pretty much any horror movie that comes out. We actually met at the film festival, the Toronto International Film Festival, for all of our Midnight Madness showings. It's like, oh, you're here again? We should probably be friends. But we went on Thursday because we were like, we can't wait. And it ended up being that all three of us had pretty crappy days. So we were like, you know what? Let's just watch a murderous doll do her thing. And we walked in and we didn't realize that the whole theater was going to be sold out. Because for a lot of other movies we've seen, especially like, you know, in the evening time, none of them were sold out. But there was, I usually have like a seat beside me for my bag. No such thing. It was phenomenal. I have not had that much fun at a movie theater in I don't know how long, maybe before the pandemic. Everybody was hooting, hollering, screaming, like, you know, yelling out their comments, and it wasn't annoying. Because, you know, sometimes that can be pretty annoying if someone's, you know. But, oh my God, I don't want to get into spoilers this early, but just there were certain points where I didn't know if it was just the people beside me that were laughing or the whole theater, because I was just so lost in it. It was probably the best theater experience I've had in a long time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I had it was pretty good for me. I mean, there wasn't a lot of people there, but the theater I went to never has anyone there. So like, if there's three people in the theater, it's a great day for that place. Like, they're making bank. And there was a lot more like kids there than I thought, like 10-year-olds. There was like a couple 10-year-olds there, and I was like, damn. I mean, I was like, wow, their parents, like, they let them come. But I was like, oh wait, this is PG-13. I like forgot that it was PG-13.
Same.
But there was a lot of kids, well, like, and I don't think they were ready though, because it's pretty like a hard PG-13. So there's a couple like where there's a thing with a nail as a non-spoiler thing, and a lot of the kids were like, oh. I was like, wow, this is going to be a real formative moment for these children. Yeah, it was fun. I had fun with that mostly just because I liked listening to whatever their reactions were going to be. And there was one moment where I laughed really hard, though, and no one else laughed. So that was a little awkward. But, you know.
There were quite a few kids in my screening, too. I purposefully go to screenings that I know won't have a lot of people at my theater.
Same.
So I always try to go to the, like, subtitled screenings at my AMC when I can, because I know those will have the least amount of people, which I did. And the subtitles were, like, weirdly, like, messed up a little bit. Like, you could see, like, they weren't as clear as the rest of the screen. Like, they were, like, you know, you can see the, like, green and pink on something in the theater. That was how the subtitles were the whole time, which was really weird because it's never been like that before. But there were a lot of kids with, like, their parents, like, probably 12 to 15-year-olds. And it was funny because when the trailers play, obviously the trailers that play are for other horror movies, usually when it's for a horror movie. And so they showed a trailer for, it wasn't the Scream movie. There was some other horror movie that's coming out. I don't remember. And
Renfield, maybe?
No, they did play that trailer. They did play that trailer, but it wasn't that one. I don't remember what it was. Yeah, it was some other horror movie that's coming out. And this girl.
The Shyamalan one?
It may have been that one. I don't know. But there was this girl who was 14, maybe 13 or 14, that clearly doesn't go to movies like this. And they played the trailer and she was like really loud about it. She was with her parents. She was like, oh, do you think I can go see that one? And the parents were like, oh, we'll see.
No, maybe not that.
Yeah, but it was one that clearly was like one that they were not going to let her see. But I thought it's cool. We can talk about PG-13. The rating when we get into stuff, but I think that was cool because a lot of times when I go to these kind of movies, there aren't kids there, or maybe there's the one kid that's like their parents are into horror, so they're super into horror too. But it's like that's usually pretty rare for these kind of movies, so it's exciting that there's a movie that kids are excited about that's in the horror genre.
I'm glad that you wanted to talk about PG-13 stuff because. And stop me if I'm jumping too far ahead.
No,
but
that's good. Yeah.
The PG-13 of now is very different than the PG-13 of the 70s and 80s because there was no R rating up until like what, 70, I think I want to say like 76 or 77.
Something like that. Right. I can't remember the date.
It was almost the 80s because my dad was like, yeah, The Exorcist was PG-13. And I was like, excuse me? Like, what? Like, no comprende. I mean, and in my theater experience, so I go to an AMC that is very bougie, and there are no kids under 6 are allowed into PG-13 screenings.
Wow.
And no kids after 8 p.m. period. And I went to a 10 p.m. screening of this, and it was like my idea of heaven. I was like, this is amazing. It was clearly like a bunch of people who care a lot about horror and who were like excited about this. The Scream trailer came on and like a couple people clapped. And Scream 2022 was actually one of my favorites. And I listened to y'all's episode when you first dropped it. And I was
No,
it's fine. I gave this disclosure on the episode that we have coming out in a couple days of this recording, not when this is released, but it's my top 5, but it's not, I mean, I'm a stan, so like I don't expect other people to like it. But it's really interesting to me, like seeing it with a group of people who appreciate the movie, but aren't, no one was like yelling out things at the screen necessarily, but like when Megan had her big climax, which is all I'm going to say before we drop the spoiler alert. One person like whooped, they were like, woo, and like did like one big clap like that. But that was about it. Which I appreciate because I mean, I own up to it all the time. When you guys say that you're pretentious, I laugh because like, I don't want people to make a fucking sound in the theater. I'm like, shut the fuck up. I paid $20 to be here. I don't want to hear you. I don't care how you feel about this movie. I get very like, yeah. So Bava and I saw Smile together and these teenagers were next to us and they talked and I literally did like a full 360 I was like, I said, are you done? And they said, can you chill? And I said, can you shut up? And then somebody behind us was like, Thank you.
Meanwhile, I'm fully there, just MJ popcorn gif. Just the hate.
So I say all that to say, like, if it's a Marvel release, I expect there, especially if I go on opening night, like, I want that crowd to be, like, amped up, right? Like, I'm here for it. But this was a late showing, you know, all adults. AMC normally does themed drinks, and I was disappointed they did not do a themed drink for Megan like they did for Nope. I know, but I got a sour apple, and I had them do pink instead of green for the sour. Felt appropriate. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, 10 out of 10 theater experience. It was, I saw it with a friend who is a creative partner of mine, and the audience was fun. I mean, I don't know. I don't feed off of the audience the way other people do, and I guess it's because I'm an actor, and I have, like, I mean, it's, again, as pretentious as it is, I'm just like, they worked really hard. Shut up. Like, I want to hear what they're doing. Like, the sound editor worked so hard on this.
Yeah, I feel like I've had a lot of worse experiences after the pandemic, definitely, because, like,
People forgot how to act.
A little too comfortable in their homes.
Yes.
And it's like, guys, we're not at home anymore. I saw the Fablemans, and there was these two kids that were, like, 10 and 13, and they just were talking the whole time.
Oh, my God.
Like, guys, this is not the movie to be talking during.
No.
Right? The Steven Spielberg's life he is sharing with us, and you are ruining his life.
He fan casted Paul Dano as his dad. God damn it. We want to see it. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. I think this one was fine though, and I didn't sit next to anyone, so it's like it kind of was just like a sound experience. Like, I just heard everyone how they liked it, because I sat kind of towards the front.
No, and just to touch on what you just said, Noah, like, I went to this was the first year that that TIFF was in person pretty much mostly.
Oh, yeah.
And the lack of, like, okay, I can't even find the right word in, like, English for it. I can only think of it in, like, Urdu or Hindi. It's tamiz, which means like basically just respect. Like, the lack of respect that these people had in the theater. Just, like, you could see people that either had never been there before or just completely devolved during the pandemic in their film going experience. Yeah. I'm like, this is the first time anyone in the world is seeing this movie. You might want to turn your phone off for 2 hours. If you can't do that, you shouldn't be here.
Yeah, if somebody's phone goes off, I get very aggressive.
Like,
I
they have like 20. Aggressive. They have 20 things beforehand that says turn your phone off. Are you not listening?
Exactly. Like, I went to the premiere of The Good Nurse, which you don't need to watch that. But it was the, premiere. It's okay. It's just not the greatest. And I didn't.
The Nurse wasn't very good. It didn't live up to the title.
No. And I mean, it made me feel bad because Jessica Chastain is just wonderful in everything she does, including this. She gave her all. Everybody else was just kind of somebody's phone went off like twice. And I literally did like the, where is that coming from? This is ruining my entire experience.
There was a phone sound that wasn't like quite a phone sound, but was like a notification sound in this screening. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell if it was in the movie or if it was someone in the theater.
There were a couple of moments.
I was like, wait, is it not?
Is someone's messenger going off? Can someone just stop?
But anyways, I digress, you guys. I got us so off track with talking about shitty people.
Yeah. It's a cathartic experience for sure. Non-spoiler things with this movie. I mean, I feel like if you've seen the trailer, you know a lot of like the premise of the movie. We can talk about performances maybe a little bit. How did you guys think about what did you guys think about some of the performances in this movie?
I mean, 10 out of 10. Yeah. I say all the time that the key to comedy and horror is taking it seriously. You can't act like it's funny. You can't act like it's supposed to be more than it is, especially with Akela Cooper's writing. I mean, she wrote Malignant, for God's sakes. Like, and the only way to fully enjoy these movies is to buy in. And so the people who go into these films and they're like, oh, that could never happen. I'm like, well, you suspend disbelief for
Captain
you know,
America.
Every other genre. Right. Thank you, Kayla, because you can read my mind. Like, why can't you suspend your disbelief for an AI that's advanced enough to become sentient and killer? Because we already had that Google tech developer quit because he was like, you're not listening to me. Our AI is becoming sentient. I mean, I have a lot of feelings about that, but that's, you know, neither here nor there.
Well, speaking of Spielberg, you can suspend your disbelief for AI that came out like 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the difference? Just because Jude Law isn't in it? Like,
yeah, I think I was impressed by the, I thought they did a good job of committing to the bit, I guess, as you could say. That's like what you, like you said, what they need to do in horror movies. Me and Kayla really like Violet McCraw. I feel like we've both been following her.
Yeah,
for
since
a
Hill
House, like,
I've been incredible. Keeping up with her.
Yeah, Hill House was really good. Mm-hmm. What was the one last
she
year?
She was
the
in the
Christmas,
Christmas mystery movie.
Yes.
Did you watch that, Jamie?
That was a great movie.
Yes.
She was so good in that.
Loved
and we
it.
Even said when we talked about that one in our Christmas episode, we were like, oh, yeah, and she's going to be in Megan, which is, like, so different, but also good.
Yeah. She's, immediately when we saw the trailer, my partner was like, oh, that's little so-and-so from Hill House. And I was like, close enough.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I've seen a few people after this, actually, because obviously she's a really big rising star.
Phenomenal.
She's next. I think even more so than her sister, who's gotten some of the same stuff about her.
Yes.
But I think Violet is like, you can tell that she has it. And I've seen a few people after this comparing her to McKenna Grace, who kind of was who we love.
Who we love.
Big McKenna Grace fan. She's great. But she kind of had that same sort of trajectory of being a rising child star. And, like, some of the stuff, it's like, okay, we're seeing that, like, maybe she's still trying to get her groove in acting, or it's hard to tell if she's directed a certain way or if that's her. So I'm really excited, and this makes me even more excited to see, like, what else she does, because, like, we've been following her for a while, but
same.
I think this specifically shows, especially after just having watched her in the Christmas movie, which is a totally different tone.
Well, and she like carried that movie too. Like, so
I was about to say,
I thought that was a good example of like her just like basically carrying the entire movie. Because this one, like, there's other actors that can pull their weight as well. The Christmas Mystery, there was really no one else to lean on. That was pretty much just her.
I watched it A, because you guys were going to cover it, and then B,
wow,
because she was in it. And I was like, all right, well, I mean, I knew, I saw the episode title come up. I was like, all right, well, I can't listen to the episode without watching it. And then she was in it. And then like halfway through, I had that moment where I was like, oh my God, I'm only halfway through this.
And it's not a long movie
Jesus
either.
No, but Kayla knows I'm not a Christmassy person. Like, I can get into the like decorating and the parties, but like the rest of it, I'm like, meh. It's fine. But this film, I think she really did a lot of emotional nuance, and she's obviously a little bit older than she was in Hill House, but there's this innocence about her that I hope she keeps, because it's really easy to get jaded as a child actor. Ask me how I know. It's just really easy to lose that naturalism. And I think she does it really well. I think McKenna Grace does it really well. And I think we're having this conversation, at least in the industry, of how, not moral, but I guess how right or correct it is to have children actors because of our schedules.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I'm just like, yeah, but I wouldn't be able to handle this if it was like an adult de-aged. Do you know what I mean?
Martin Scorsese, Irishman style. Like, all right,
guys. Oh, don't get me started on Irishman. I was so disappointed.
Or like,
oh, man, I love, I'm a big Irishman guy as well. I like the Irishman a lot.
The Orphan First Kill movie would be a good example.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that movie.
But yeah, it would be an example of like. Yeah.
But like, I couldn't handle every child in the movie being that, like, that was an exception. I was like, it works for this, but if it was every like role in a movie de-aged,
I
would hate that.
No,
yeah,
because there are actors out there that you can find. So de-aging is just
the only role that I was like, because it's I feel like the movie's really campy, but none of the roles are played campy except for her like main boss. He I think was just, he thought the movie was a little more campy than it actually was.
Yeah.
Correct. It was like, he just was on a different playing field that everyone else was on. Like, he was on a different plane of trajectory of what the movie actually was. So that was the only one that stood out. I was like,
he was definitely funny. Like, he made me laugh a few times, but he did feel, his performance did feel a little out of place, which could be directing, could be writing, could have been him. And I don't know.
And he has a comedy background. So how much of it was like he didn't get put in check?
Yeah.
Can I tell you guys what took me out performance wise? Is one of the developers is Brian Jordan Alvarez, who I follow on TikTok and who I think is hilarious. I think he's wonderful. But all I could see him as is his characters
on
that
TikTok?
He plays
That's so
on
funny.
TikTok. And I was like, he showed up and I went, oh, your Southern aunt who owns real estate. And the friend that I went with was like, what? And and I was like, it's Brian Jordan Alvarez, and he was like, who? And I'm glad for him. Like, I'm glad that that's, you know, something that he benefited from. But, and I'm gonna be a little, you know, artisty right now. But again, as an actor, like, I was like, God damn it, I have to participate in TikTok. Like, I love TikTok, but I'm like, I have to actually produce content.
Oh, and yeah, I like just I just sit back and enjoy the ride. It's the one thing I'm like, no, I don't need to do anything here. I'll let you guys all do that.
Well, and Kayla and Bhavna know, Noah, my day job is in social when I'm not acting. Mm-hmm. And so like, I see that the man behind the curtain, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you want to talk about jaded. I'm like, bah, all right, like, I guess I'll do this specific.
Yeah. Everything focuses on TikTok. Like, it's all about TikTok these days, which is interesting with this movie because, like, I think for a movie that, like, is around tech, it's interesting because a lot of, like, the concern, quote-unquote, about TikTok is this, the algorithm and, like, the data and who sees the data and how the algorithm reads what you're watching, which I'll say, the algorithm is insane.
Listen, it drags me. I will scroll and it'll be like, are you a former gifted child who was raised in the church, who is now agnostic and like works in social media and also is a performer? And I'm just like, shut the fuck up.
And that's something that I'm just like, it's funny in this movie because I think at this point, like, there is a kind of looming, like, oh, AI is taking over. I mean, we see it in art. Like, recently, like, it's taking over certain aspects of the world. And you kind of have this, like, oh, this is probably bad and scary and will end up being something horrible is probably going to happen. But at the same time, it's like, I'm kind of, like, ambivalent to it.
Can't
because
do anything anyway.
I don't really want to think about it, and I can't do anything about it. And that's what's so interesting about this movie, because it, like, focuses on so much of that. And at first, they're kind of just, like, oh, yeah, like, we're just doing this, and it's cool, and it's going to be something that's in everyone's homes, like, interacting with their children, and everyone's like, great, let's throw money into it. But you're not really, like, thinking about the concerns about it, which is an interesting thing right now to, like,
I have so many thoughts, but they're all full of spoilers, so I'm going
to refrain. Well, and it's like, we can kind of give our final or non-spoiler thoughts. I haven't even, like, said how much I like the movie. I don't know. It's weird because we haven't really talked about that part. But, yeah, it's very anti-technology, so it's interesting that it is, like, its success has relied so much on the use of technology and, like, a lot of the things that it is, and obviously, like, marketing teams and the people that made it are different, so that's a lot of the reason why. But it's just, like, an interesting juxtaposition where, like, the movie is very, like, in your face about its thoughts on technology. Sometimes a little too much, I think. But, like, the whole marketing strategy has been based around, like, using these algorithms to target people to see this movie. Final non-spoiler thoughts. Like, I thought it was a pretty good movie. I enjoyed my time with it. I had a fun time. I think it's, like, the perfect January movie because it's, like, there's very low stakes. And you kind of just go in and you have your popcorn and then you just, it's very short too. It's like, we've had a lot of long movies recently. So it's like, when it ended, I thought, wait, that's it? We have nothing else? I can go? And I think my only thing was, like, it is very by the numbers. Like, I probably could have predicted the overall structure of the movie before I even sat in my seat. Like, what I thought was going to happen happened in the movie, which is, like, I don't know. There's not many other directions you could go, but I would have liked to see maybe a little bit more like innovation, especially with the aunt character, because I thought that she had a lot more to explore, and she kind of they kind of like hinted at some stuff, but maybe, like we'll say, they're making a sequel to this, so maybe they'll explore more of that in the sequel. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun time, and it's definitely worth your time at the theater. Like, there's not really much coming out right now, so if you've looking for something new to see, I would definitely recommend checking it out.
I mean, for me, this was just such a fun little exercise, and like, how much are we willing to buy into an idea, which she did with Malignant.
Yeah,
definitely. And I fully, yeah. And Akela went on the King Cast to talk about how much James Wan had, you know, a hand in making it what it is, but he didn't direct this movie.
Yeah.
And so for him just to be, I mean, he was involved, but he wasn't the main director. I think she's underselling herself in some points, because how she wrote these characters, I mean, just such a good takedown of like startup culture. Like, I was dying the whole time. I say that as someone who works for a startup. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah, very satirical in some of those scenes with like when they're in her office. Like,
yes,
it's you can see it is a comedy. So I think that's why they probably hire comedic actors. But it's a different kind of comedy than like, I don't know, yelling loudly about different things. Like, it's very subtle, and but it also works for the story, too, which is cool. Like, it's not just there because they want to do a satire in this one scene. Like, it's part of the overall narrative and themes.
And the payoff is great.
Exactly.
Agreed.
Yes.
Yeah. Honestly, this was like the best thing for me to watch on the day I watched it as well. Like, the stars lined up. Like I was saying, I had a crappy day. And then for that, however long it was, didn't think about anything that was bothering me for that entire time, which honestly is probably the best thing I could say about a movie, especially a rated PG-13 horror movie. But no, honestly, like 10 out of 10 for me. Which
Megan
I don't
did her like, job. She came in and she helped you.
She did.
She knew what you needed.
She did.
She came in and she provided that comfort.
She provided comfort. She provided entertainment, like everything. She was so nurturing.
Kayla, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I went into this with fairly no expectations at all. Like, I just kind of was like, oh, this will be fun. Like, I was excited about it, but it wasn't like, I didn't have anything to expect from it, really. It was just one of those things that I was like, oh, this will be a fun, like, movie to start the year with. And that was pretty much how I came out of it. Like, I didn't even, like, come out of it with, like, too much criticism. Like, normally when I go into movies, I get very, like, oh, and this happened, and this happened, and I feel this way about this. Yeah. Like, having to, like, break stuff down. But I kind of was just like, this isn't really that kind of movie. Like, there is stuff in it that, like, obviously is deeper, like, themes, and they did tap into a lot of these things that I think are important, but I think at the same time you can watch it and just be like, that was just a good time. Like, it doesn't have to be a movie for someone. Like, it can be a movie that you take a lot out of, which I think is really the horror genre in general. Like, you can watch it and be like, wow, I really, like, felt this about it, or felt like these different things. But I think overall you can just come out of it and be like, you know what, that was a fun viewing experience, and I'm glad that I spent my time watching it.
Yeah, let's go to spoilers then, because I think there's some things that we all want to talk about, but we've been like circling around, so let's let's head to an ad break, and then when we come back we'll talk about some spoilers.
We're back.
I don't know. What do we want to do first? Climax? Plot things? I don't know.
Kills.
So many options.
Needle drops.
What was your favorite kill?
The nail gun kill in the hand, and then she sprays her. That was great. That was pretty good.
Because they don't show it, and so I wanted to ask y'all's opinion on this. Do we think that the water pressure was enough to, like, I guess, rupture...
Mm-hmm.
I think it was part of the poison.
Sure, was the poison?
That's what I thought too. It was the poison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it was the water first, and then she poisoned. I feel like she pick up.
Yeah, because remember, because she did it with the water, but then remember, like, there was that whole thing about the chemicals.
I guess I remember her saying that, but I guess, like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, law and chemicals aren't enough to, like, kill you instantaneously.
Maybe
but
she
again,
put it in her mouth.
I think it was like, she was like shooting at her mouth.
Which is so funny because you're like trying to like, that's one thing that's interesting about this movie is because it is PG-13. They don't show you those kills. Like they do, but they don't. So it leaves a lot up to the mind to be like.
Which in my opinion, and I know I say this all the time on our podcast, but in my opinion, it always winds up being scarier because.
Yeah.
Sure.
My intrusive thoughts are like, what if it blew enough water pressure into her ear canal that it shot through her brain?
Yeah.
And
which
shattered
is, which
piece
is
of
fun.
Skull.
Yeah. It's fun to see, but sometimes you want to, your imagination can give you more to work with than what
significantly
the filmmaker
more.
Can make. Yeah. yeah.
And I think it's cool to see that the, in that case, then the filmmakers have to make the choice to be more creative about the kills because it's kind of like, a lot of times I think you can get away with being like, oh my gosh, they just got stabbed in the face. And like you see it and so you're like, ugh, because you see, you know, I think of the kill in Scream where,
with Dewey.
The one that Dylan plays.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that Dylan Minnette plays. He gets the knife to the cheek. And that was the only part in the movie that I had to like, I had to like close my eyes.
You're so
because
funny.
I was like, I can't watch that. But I think that is like one that you watch it and you're like, ugh, because it's gross. But in a movie like this where you can't show that, you kind of have to be like, ooh, how do we make this still kind of a kill where you're like, ugh, I don't like that. But you're not showing it. So I think it's cool that they are able to kind of do things that, I don't know. It's really creative that they can make it seem that way without having to show.
Yeah, like I feel like when your mind fills in the blanks, it's a lot scarier than like watching an actual thing happen in front of you.
Yeah,
very Hitchcockian.
Yes.
Well, and think about Jaws. Like Jaws was made because of the limitations, they couldn't really show most of the kills, and so I think that Jaws is one of the greatest movies of all time, in my opinion. So like if you are studying horror movies, like I feel like a lot of horror movies recently have gone for a lot of shock factor, which is fine. I think that's cool and it's always fun to see, but it's I think not very lasting in your mind. Like it's more just like in the moment you're like, man, that was pretty gross, there goes his head, but then I'm like not thinking about it ever again. Like I'm like
well, yeah, because, like, normally, like, let's say we did see her head get blown off with the water pressure or whatever. You would just be like, oh, okay, yeah, that happened.
Rip.
But, like, you can't have the conversation where it's like, oh, well, maybe this, like, where you're still thinking about it being like, well, is the blood from her skin peeling off? Is it from her, like, skull being cracked open? Is it from, like, you have all these questions where you keep talking about the kill instead of it being like, oh, yeah, I saw this happen.
You know what's funny is that you guys asked me what my favorite kill was, and I couldn't even pinpoint something, like, off the bat because it's PG-13. Mm-hmm. And there were so many scenes that weren't shown. So they kind of blended together besides the water pressure / grass poison kill.
Yeah.
Which was my favorite because I love that actor, but she really does play like nosy neighbor really well. I don't know.
If she was, honestly, I thought about nominating her for the supporting actress in our like annual like we do like a short running list all year. And so I like made up the new 2023 list and I was like, I was like, I could put her in for a supporting actress.
Have you guys seen Watcher on Netflix?
No.
The show or the movie?
The show, but she plays literally this exact same character. And so when I saw her, I was like, oh, fuck, she's going to be the first person that dies. I got to say,
I don't think that was her. I think that was Margot Martindale.
Was it?
In the show.
Classic BoJack Horseman.
Yeah. Reference. I was about to say she was giving Margot Martindale the neighbor.
Yeah.
She
neighbor,
was.
But I think
character
Bava
actress
knows.
Margot Martindale.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, regardless, it's the
same character.
Same style, same character, same vibe.
Same,
and
like,
so, I mean, the dog was technically the first kill. And I'm not, I get it. People don't like when animals die in movies. I'm a softie for animals. But if it would have been, I don't know, like a little bit more apparent, I think it would have, if it would have been campy, it would have bothered me a lot more than it did. And that's kind of how this whole movie played out, I think.
Yeah, I liked the when the kid got his ear ripped off. That was pretty fun.
That's my favorite kill.
And I liked how like far they took the stretchiness of his ear, because it was like, wow, that is one stretchable ear right there. I thought that was pretty funny.
For me, it was a setup of that kill that was everything. Like her predator style, like crawling in the leaves.
That was crazy. When she was like running through, I was like, see, this is how you do, like, get some of that sort of PG-13 horror where like it's still very creepy, but at the same time it's like kind of cool, but then it's also like, ooh, it is
scary. And then I even had that sense of dread when he was just going and like picking on her when she was just standing in the she had just appeared, and like I'm like, oh, this is not gonna end well. You're gonna die.
Also too, at that point, since you haven't really seen Megan kill,
right,
like you kind of are like, you don't really know how it's gonna happen, but you know it's gonna happen. And so well, and then when she rips off the ear, you're like, okay, well, maybe she's not gonna kill him,
right?
Like maybe that was just the punishment and we leave it at that. But then you're like, oh wait, no, she did kill him.
There she goes.
Yeah, that was the part I laughed at the most, when with that kid, when his mom was like, he's like, yeah, he's such a sensitive soul. And he's like, bye. And he's like, fuck off, mom. I was dying. I thought that was so funny, and no one laughed. It was a pretty great use of like F word and PG-13.
I was about to say, if you're going to throw away one of your two, that was a great place to put
that. It was perfect. I saw it coming. I was like, yes, do it.
It's always the hashtag boy moms.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, you know, what did she say? She was like, yeah, you know, the gifted ones are always the troubled ones are always the one that ends up like doing the big thing. I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. Sounds good.
I'm pretty sure he's a future school shooter, but okay, mom.
Right. Yeah. Future school shooter at the, like at the forest school in the forest.
Yeah.
The alternative.
That was such a good takedown of Montessori schools, because I've seen a Montessori school in person, and like, don't even get me started, you guys. It's just like, good for you, I guess. But
yeah, I worked at a nature school for a year and a half.
I forget that Kayla and I both have worked with well-to-do children.
Went to like not a Montessori, but I went to an alternative school for like a couple of years. But like they were an alternative school in practice, but they had to do at least a couple of things to keep their public school funding, because you couldn't technically be a public school.
That's good.
So thankfully we had that, but we still had a lot of like the, we don't believe in competition, so we're not going to have sports teams, and like a lot of other stuff. Like I'm going to say for the most part, it was fine. I liked calling my teachers by their first name.
That's dope.
Right.
That's nice.
I liked learning on a beanbag. It was great. It was less stress. I didn't have to sit like a regimented little desk all day, but, no, this was such a great satire on that entire thing though. Like I could totally see shades of like the concepts I grew up with, and I'm like, oh fuck, that's it.
And Kayla, I was so interested to hear your take on this, because for me, something that was a big highlight of this film was not only the critique, of course, of AI, but sort of a commentary on modern parenthood, right? Like people who want kids in theory and who have a big problem usually with people who don't, are able to afford to pass off a lot of the emotional and physical labor of child rearing to paid help. And it was really interesting coming from someone who was a personal assistant / nanny before I, you know, did my other day jobs and acting career and stuff. But it's, that hit me hard, where it's like, your parents would literally rather spend 10 grand, which they repeat throughout the film that she costs, you know, 10 grand. They would rather spend that money for you than spend time with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, or even hire like good care.
Right.
Like, cause I'm a nanny.
Right.
Part time right now. And like, I work with a great family and great kids. And like, I get paid very well from them. Like, they pay me very fairly. But it's like, a lot of people don't want to pay fairly for childcare. There's a lot of people who can't pay for childcare. And it's one of those things that it's like, you would rather buy a doll that does what, you know, than like pay good money for like someone who's trained to like help you or whatever too. Then, I mean, if you're going to have someone help with your kid, it's like, Don't you want someone who, like, understands and, like, you know, actually wants to care for your kid instead of, like, a robot that's like, oh, I understand because I, like, searched something and downloaded, like, how to respond to a kid's emotions.
Right. Like, when she's at the dinner table and she's like, studies show that 60% of children don't eat vegetables after an adult forces them, you know, like.
Yeah, and, like, also how it's, like, the talking about how you shouldn't turn to technology for, like, all your needs as well. Like, I really liked the scene where she was like, are you going to read me a bedtime story? And she's like, no, but I don't have any, but I could download one. And then she's like, oh, I have to wait for the app to update. And they're just sitting there. I was like, that's so funny. Like, why don't you just make up a story? Like, it's not that hard. Like, it's not. Right. Just tell the three. You don't know Goldilocks? Like, that's escaped you?
Right. Like she was definitely a satire on, like, what people perceive people that don't want kids and are career focused are like. Like, it's definitely a satire because I know tons of people that don't want children. And I know tons of people that are very career focused, but none of them need to download an app for a bedtime story.
Right.
Yeah, which is so funny. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't want kids, but, like, it's so easy to pull a story out of your ass and, like.
Right. Like, we all know the Three Little Pigs. We all know Cinderella off the top of our head.
I mean, or literally, like, just tell her anything about your life. Like, oh, yeah, this one time. Like, a normal, like, I don't know, like, you'd say. I mean, obviously, like, she doesn't have books in her house. But, like, it would be so easy to be like, oh, yeah, when I was a kid, I did this one thing.
Kids love that shit. Like, they love to hear about our life. Like, I'll be like, well, one time I went to Peru, and then I hiked a mountain. And they're like, was it cold? Was it scary? And I'm like, yes, it was both. Like, they love that
Like, hell, even just tell a work story, but make your boss into a monster. And, like, make your coworkers into gremlins or something. You know, like, it's not that hard. Just copy pasta your life into a story.
And do you know what else I really picked up on was the these are toys technically, but they're not toys you play with, they're toys you collect. And I was like, oh, woof, like, that's a pretty large subsect of the population.
These are not movies that you watch. I felt that, though. That would be my satire.
As you wear your Criterion collection shirt.
These are for the shelf. You do not take them out.
Well, because, like, I have a bunch of Lego sets. And, which, like, I play Legos with the kids that I nanny, and I've gotten them Lego sets that we built, but they, like, play with them. And then I was, like, showing them pictures of my my Christmas village, and they were like, oh, like, do you play with it? I was like, no. No, they sit there on the shelf like they're collectibles. Right. You don't play with them. But yeah, that was really funny. But I did, like, when she had to, like, when she went to rip the box open.
I felt it in my heart.
Damn. That's a lot of money right there.
I wouldn't have. I thought the social worker character was really interesting because, like, I think social workers a lot of times in movies and stuff get a bad rap. And I do think that there are bad social workers out there. But, like, I have a few friends who work in social working, and I think there are also some great people in social work. And at first, it's one of those things where, like, her character, you were kind of like, ooh, like, she's being kind of, like, weird and, like, pushy, and, like, I'm not really a fan. But then, like, later when she kind of said that thing about the doll to Gemma, where she was like, she can't rely on the doll, that I was like, oh, damn. Okay,
right. Okay, she knows what she's talking about.
I was like, maybe she is kind of cool.
As someone who's very career focused, even when Gemma was like, you know, can you just go play for like 10 minutes and do, I forget the exact line now, but I literally went, bitch. Out
she
loud.
Said, like, she because, said, like, hold down the fort. I was like, hold down the fort.
That's what it was. That's what it was. What are you talking like, about?
The way she said that line, I thought she was going into the office, not down the hall. I was like, is she leaving her alone?
That's what I thought at first. I was like, is she literally going to go, like, to her office and she's going to lose the kid?
Well, what's so funny, like, and obviously she doesn't have kids, so but she works for a toy company.
Right.
But I'm like, kids that age are so easy. Like,
easiest job.
One of the kids I nanny is that age, and it's literally like, oh, okay, well, how about I work on this and you can watch over my shoulder, and the kid is like entranced by what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or, like, literally, you know, I mean, hand her an iPad or something. Right. Like, kids are pretty self-sufficient, but at the same time, it's like, the kids that age are so easy. Like, you could just be like, oh, here, do this, and they'll, like, do it.
Yeah.
I did crack up when Katie was like, what about screen time? When do I have to turn it off?
She's like, screen time? What are you talking about? Yeah, do we want to talk a little bit, too, about the ending? So we've got our big climactic fight, which, again, was like, once they were in that fight, I was thinking, wait, is this the end of the movie? Because it felt like it had been, like, because I feel like I've seen so many three-hour movies recently. I was like, wow, we're already here. We made it. I thought it was a pretty good fight. And I liked how they both, like, had to collaborate together to beat her. Because I think that, like, was kind of part of the theme. So I like that it was, like, they both worked on it. And it was interesting that it was, like, they tried to use technology to beat the robot, but they couldn't. It wouldn't work, and they had to, like, do it themselves. So I thought that was also pretty good.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
I love that. Here's what I was worried about. Once Katie, you know, hit the robot using the gloves, I was worried that she wasn't going to be able to save herself after all, and that we were going to get Gemma driving that final blow to Megan. And I was like, no, there's something really powerful about this little girl being the one who kicks ass and, like, the one who drives that final screwdriver into her microchip. Like, I don't know. I just found this so cathartic. I was like, yes.
Well, also, she's the hero. I still think the aunt should be held accountable for the deaths. I feel like she's still she's a murderer. So I'm glad that I can just like her. I don't have to also be like, well, at least she killed her. Like, no, she just sucks. She's the worst.
I don't know, but I mean, I don't think she. Do you think she could have predicted that Megan would have become a killing machine?
I mean she definitely should not have tried to like push it into the tech sphere.
Well, and she's Megan said that like she equipped her with like a learning model that she didn't understand, so it seemed like she wasn't really taking the necessary precautions and was just kind of like a lot of tech like startups like in Silicon Valley stuff where it's like
you just
do things without thinking about the consequences, like, which technically,
I'm more worried about the fact that she, like, willingly paired it with Katie.
Right.
Without testing it, then being, like, just pushing it into, like,
also, the devil.
I mean,
right
obviously,
there.
It would have been awful testing it with any kid. Without, but I was like, no, your poor niece. Like,
also, I think there's something to be said for the fact that they literally pushed Katie into performing right after the most tragic event that could have happened in her life. Yeah. Like, this poor child absolutely has PTSD.
Well, what did she say? She was like, you don't have to go if you don't want to. Oh, I mean, so many lots of people do. Lots of people flew out across the country for this.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
You don't have to do
Maybe
it.
Megan was right.
That's what I said.
I think Megan was right.
Yeah. She did nothing wrong.
You just jogged my memory, Noah. That's when I said, bitch, out loud in the theater. I said, bitch. And I meant to say it, like, to the person that saw it with me. I, like, turned to him, and I was like, bitch. But the person in front of me heard me, and she lost it. And I was like, listen, I think there's a level of, like, trauma-informed parenting that thankfully is happening now, sort of with this as millennials become parents. But also, woof. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just so many.
And yeah, maybe Katie should be sent to the parents.
Yeah, I feel like the grandparents are the better option at this point right now.
And honestly, also speaking as someone that works in tech, QA is a thing. QA is a thing before you even bring in a little kid. You QA the shit out of that doll before you even pair her with a child.
Yeah.
Like, do you know how much QA I have to do on a regular basis before someone can send out an email from an app? Like, an email, not a sentient doll.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's also, like, talking about the I guess just the whole attitude of those kind of tech companies where it's, like, try to get ahead over the competition no matter what the cause, like, always, like, looking for the next thing, and like, because she's pushing her for this other doll, and so that is like, well, okay, well, let's just give him this, so then we have something, and we can try to get ahead of whatever.
Well,
the next
it's also like they were trying to make originally, like they were trying to make an affordable toy. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, we want something that's a little cheaper that like everyone can buy, but now we're gonna do a $10,000 toy. Yes.
That toy hit me in my millennial feels so hard. I'm like, oh, it's a Furby.
Yes.
Okay, that was one of the best openings to a film in years.
Oh yeah, it was good. It's fire funny.
That was a great opening.
I immediately thought of the Simpsons episode immediately as soon as they started playing it. First, I was like, excellent with the funky instead of Funko.
Yeah. Well, and then it being like their buttholes light up to change colors according to their emotions.
That was funny.
What the fuck?
That was like one of those like the Hatchimals. Remember that they had those a few years ago?
Oh God, the Hatchimals.
That,
yes.
That was those. Yeah.
Kids love that stuff. They though. Do. Anything relating to a butt,
they think it's like a comedy.
Yes.
Oh yeah, funniest.
All I thought
in the
of was like that one bit from the comedian who I won't name because he's gross, but just the A B C D E F G I will kill your family coming from like a
oh God.
Yeah, and my other thing I wanted to say about the ending, which I really liked the final shot too, because I think it was just the one reason I don't know about the sequel, because I just feel like they kind of said everything that they needed to say, and I like how it really turns it on the audience, where you're fight the whole time you're like, why the hell would they like think that this was a good idea to have this Megan doll and like follow them around and do all this learning, and you're at the end you're like, good, they killed her, they got rid of it. And then you realize, like, man, I'm pretty much exactly the same. Like, I literally have a Google Home in my room right now. But so it's really interesting because you're judging the character the whole time in the situation. And you're like, oh, man, this is awful. I never would be like this. But it kind of turns it on you a little bit and the audience where it's like, are we already...
But
at this point,
but there's a difference though. The Google Home isn't doing everything for you. It isn't raising your like your family. It isn't cooking for you. It isn't cleaning for you.
No. But there's, I guess they were, because they said that they implemented like learning models in the dolls,
right.
And mm-hmm. obviously in like all these listening devices, we like they have learning models in them at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So it's already. It's more about like the obviously Megan is done, but there will be another thing that they make that is a similar thing, and they already have all the information that they need. I thought it was just an interesting, and it made it a little bit less of like, oh, that was just like a really fun satire, but like, I mean, it did what a satire should do, and it kind of held a mirror to the audience a little bit.
Well, that that ending though, yeah. Do we really think that Megan's in the knockoff Alexa?
I think that Megan, it's like she has the whole thing, like her brain is like the whole network in that house,
yeah.
Is probably what my thoughts are, because it was connected to it. I think she probably connected everything together and paired everything together.
Yeah.
So that's what I think. It's like she just lives in the technology.
Let this be a lesson for everybody. Turn your Bluetooth off if you're not using it. Turn your Wi-Fi off if you're not using it. Turn your location off if you're not
everyone,
using it.
Everyone, go to the alternative schools and stay there and never return.
Go live in the forest.
Man. But I don't know what the sequel will be. I mean, I don't know if it will be like an orphan thing where it's like a whole new story and they use just like the same idea, or if they're going to continue with the same characters.
Yeah, if there's going to be a new Megan
doll.
Not an
orphan thing.
Well,
what's the Annabelle.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking about.
Well,
like Annabelle.
Yeah. Didn't What's-His-Face steal all the tech and everything and email it to the competitors?
Yes.
The assistant. Yeah.
That's
that we never touched upon at all?
So the next one will be, I'm trying to think of what a different name would be.
I'm thinking of something with four as an A, since we've already done three. So like model four, maybe it's like Maggie instead of Megan, or like, yeah.
I like the alliteration too. It'd be cool if they did a trilogy and had like all M names, and like, that'd be cool. Look cool on the shelf, like the three Blu-rays. Yeah. I just like, I don't know. I've always
Megan,
thinking about marketing. Yeah.
Maggie and Marjabelle.
There you go.
Or you could take a completely different direction and go Megan 2, Katie's in therapy.
Yeah.
Only in the happiest timeline.
Yeah. Which, let's be real, that's not happening.
Maybe yeah, she'll make, I mean, like, a robot therapist. That will be the sequel. Ooh. She's like, guys, I figured it out. Robot therapists.
Yeah. Robot therapists to deal with our robot caregivers.
I mean, for me personally, this movie was, like, it gave me what I thought it was going to give. It was a 5 out of 5. I went in with middling expectations of the execution of the film, but high expectations for the story, knowing that Akela Cooper wrote it. But also knowing who had a hand in producing it. And, I just, between the, like, the commentary and the needle drops, I mean, she sings Bulletproof, which just took me all the way out. You know, she plays that toy piano that sent me. And I think this is just such a good satire of sort of modern, I mean, exactly what you guys said, like, modern. Oh, I would never let my child play with that. But you have an Alexa in your home who is listening to everything that you talk about. So I actually made my partner take the Alexa out of our office because I work in social for tech. And so, like, you know, we can't have anything even vaguely that could record us. And so when I'm working, you know, there's no Siri, there's no Alexa, there's nothing. And I just find it really interesting that they took sort of the biggest fear of AI is that it's going to become this fully fleshed out person with personhood. And she becomes the bad guy. When I think in reality, you know, the bad guys already exist and they're creating these things for us. Yeah. And we're just walking them on into our house.
Like, Are we the bad guy is the final question that Metro offers.
Yeah. All right, Billie Eilish.
Honestly, I would pair this movie up, like, if we're going to talk about, like, satires and stuff, I would put this up there with, like, The Menu, Glass Onion, Triangle of Sadness, I would, and then Megan. I feel like those would be my four, like, my little mini film fest right there.
Yeah, from the last, like, year or so. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'd probably start with, like, Triangle of Sadness to get that, like, serious thing going, and then I'd go for The Menu to get that, like, absurdity, Glass Onion to kind of, like, ease you into the silly, and then Megan just to top it off.
There you go. Yeah, quadrility, whatever, I don't know, that's probably,
yeah, this would be a good double feature with Glass Onion. Mm-hmm. Like a commentary on tech. Yeah. And
yep. So it just kind of bleeds through. We start with the rich and then we bleed right into the tech.
Yeah, and the tech and how it's affecting the people on the ground.
Yeah.
So our first question of the week of 2023 is, what would you call the Megan sequel? So obviously they're writing it right now. They're in the writer's room. And so I think it'd be really nice if we did some of their job for them. Because obviously they're all listening to this. And so they're on the edge of their seats. They don't know what to call it. And that will be all of our job. Yeah, you come up with what you think the Megan sequel should be called, and then next week we will reveal those answers in a new childhood classics episode. Kayla, what is our childhood classic next week that we will be talking about?
We will be talking about one of the greatest children's movies of all time. Yes. Hook.
Truly.
My actual movie. Favorite movie of all time that I even have a tattoo, which I cannot angle properly.
Are you serious?
Yep, it says Bangarang.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hook is a great movie. And Steven Spielberg is on the Oscar.
It's one of his best.
On the Oscar run right now. He's doing the interviews, and I think it's only fair that we talk about one of his most underrated films.
His best movie, Hook. Everyone Can Fight Me.
I'm sad there was no Hook references in the Fablemans. I was really hoping for, like, just a little, like, bag of marbles or something. I don't know.
I was looking for a bag of marbles. I was looking for, like, a pack of Lost Boys. I mean, the closest you could probably get were the Boy Scout kids, but, like, not even.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe if one of them said Bangarang, it would really drive it home.
Yeah, or if one of them was named, like, Rufio or something.
Rufio, come over here. Help me with this shot. Oh, my God. Oh, my word. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. I think it'll be another good January episode. Very fun. I haven't seen the movie in a long time, so I'm excited to revisit it. Do you guys have anything? You kind of already plugged at the beginning, but do you want to re-plug your podcast, any of your socials, anything like that?
Yep, we're at Bloody Broads Pod on Twitter and Instagram. You can also send us an email, bloodybroadspod@gmail.com. I'm at Glitter Burrito on Twitter, and Bhavna.
I'm at The Lucky Charms, that's SHARMS on Twitter, Hive, most places except for Instagram, where I've got a little underscore at the end.
Amazing. And on social media, just we have a couple different tags. Just search Secondhand Film Critics and you'll find us. That is probably the easiest way. Everything is in the show notes, so you can scroll down on there and, yeah, click on whatever your social media of choice is. Like I said, next week we will be doing our Hook episode, Childhood Classic series, and those episodes drop on Tuesday at 10 a.m. So on Tuesday at 10 a.m., if you're looking for something to listen to, we'll be there. Probably, hopefully. That's the goal.
And thanks, everyone, for tuning in to the beginning of what will hopefully be
a great year. A great year in the pod, hopefully.
Fingers crossed that 2023 is better. If Megan is anything to tell by, maybe this will be a very good year. And until next time, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Noah.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Bhavna.
And we're second-hand film critics. That wasn't bad.